Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Sarah Fisher Talks Connective Parenting. So this week it is another one of your requests. And arguably this is one I probably should have done first when I came back a few weeks ago with the podcast. But this one I am going to share with you a bit about what connective parenting is, the philosophy, where it's come from, and give you an overview of the approach. Now, obviously, you will understand that in kind of 10, 15 minutes of the podcast, I'm not going to go into it in loads and loads of detail, but to give you kind of an overview of it for those of it are new to connective parenting MVR. So hopefully it will give you what you need to think about whether or not this is the right approach for you, or it's just a good reminder if maybe you've been doing it for a while. So where do we start? Connective parenting has grown from the principles of MVR. So when I was having some really significant challenges at home as a parent, I found out about MVR and went on a course. That was about 9.5 years ago now. And it was life changing. And back then, there wasn't the knowledge, the number of practitioners around, all of that type of thing. So from that one day course, I started putting it into practice and realized just how hugely beneficial it was. And so trained coming up for 8 years ago now. I started working with parents after that training, initially with my mentor and then gradually kind of branching out by myself. And as you know, I've now been sharing this approach with parents and professionals for about 7 years or just over now. Over that time, I have developed how I used it myself. I still use it as my parenting approach. But we've also brought in other elements, and that's why we call it Connective Parenting MVR. It's our version of it, our take on it, that includes other things and has a real awareness of neurodiversity, the trauma, attachment, sensory needs, all of those other things that impact our children's responses to things. The support they need, the parenting style they need, all of those bits. So we build it all in. The central pillar of everything we teach is connection. Connection is at the heart of everything. It's often called parental presence within MVR, very similar. We are thinking about how do I connect with my child in a way that works for them? How do I connect with them in a way that builds their self-belief, their sense of lovability, their self-esteem, all of those things. And so everything we're doing is about building that connection so that whether they are with us or not, they have a positive mental image of us in their mind that says, it's okay, you've got this, or I'm here for you, however we want to think about it. And I often use the description of a harbour as a way of thinking about this. So we are our children's harbour walls. Harbour has big solid walls around the outside of it. In the middle, the water is always calm. In the harbour, the water is always calm. It can be a force 10 gale going on outside and the ship can be bashed around left, right and centre in the gale. As soon as it gets into the harbour, it knows it's safe. And we are our children's harbour walls. We are putting those walls up that says, these big scary emotions you've got, maybe in the middle of a meltdown, I've got it, I'm here for you, I can help you process these. Or when they're out with their friends and they're getting maybe peer pressure to do something they don't want to do, it's, I'm here for you, don't worry, we've got this together. So that connection is central to everything. And when we're thinking about that, in order for us to be really connected with our child, we also need to be connected to ourselves, to recognize our own emotions, to recognize our own triggers, and to be able to manage our emotions and our triggers as much as possible in as safe and appropriate way as possible. So if you have followed me for any period of time, you will know I am a huge believer in self-care or looking after yourself. I think it's very hard for us to be connected to our children if we're not connected to our own emotions. I'm not saying it's not doable, I just think it's harder. And so that's one of the balls around the outside, I suppose. You've got connection in the center and then you've got these different spurs or aspects around the outside. And one of the crucial ones is looking after yourself. We have to be able to do that. You know, if our children are struggling with their emotions, we need to be in the best place possible to be able to remain calm, to keep those harbour walls strong and to protect them. So that's obviously really important around the outside. We talk a lot about what to do in those moments when our child's emotions are escalating. I know many, many of the parents who come to work with us, whether it's in our group programs, in the Connected Parenting Hub or one-to-one, the outbursts, I suppose, for want of another word, for their children, when their children are having those really big emotions and they don't know how to manage them. That's the thing that often is what's driven them to come and work with us. So in the moment, we look at how can we create connection so that those harbor walls are around our child and they're really big and strong, that they remain firm. How do we stay calm in that moment and regulate and co-regulate with our child so that we can bring them back down to a calm space? And then afterwards, when things are calm, how can we collaborate with them and talk to them to A, reconnect, because that's hugely important after there's been a disconnect, but also to help them understand themselves more, to help them with their own emotional development so that they can move forward and understand themselves, understand what's happening, and start to think about different ways of expressing those emotions that is safe for them, but also the people around them. And when we're looking at that, you know, we know that if you have a child who's being aggressive, they don't want to be, there could be huge levels of shame sitting in there as well. So these collaborative conversations help them to work through those emotions, to help reduce any negative feelings they might be having, and help them to think about what they're doing in the future so that, again, they don't have to live through those really negative emotions. So that's how we think about the meltdowns and the collaborative working with them. And I think that collaboration at the heart is there when we're thinking about connection. We're collaborating with them, we're connecting with them in a way that works for them. So this isn't about you having all of the answers and knowing what to do and being able to solve every problem they ever have. It's about connecting in a way that enables them to feel safe to create the connection and to collaborate with you in that development, but also in their own learning and development. So around the outside, we also have this idea of doing gestures for our children to show them that we love them irrespective of their behavior. We separate out them from the behavior. We don't say, I don't love you because you were just rude to me. We say, I love you even though you were rude to me, but I do have a boundary around that behavior. And I'm going to help you think about how you might manage that differently next time. So we absolutely have boundaries around things. We don't let them get away with things, which I know I've heard before. You know, this approach just lets them get away with it. No, it doesn't. We don't use consequences like, I don't know, grounding them or the naughty step or whatever, those kind of things. We work with them when things haven't worked to work through the emotions without any blame or shame, to help them to understand themselves and to grow. And we do lots of nurture. So we have those two hands. We have the real nurturing side and the development side, but we do have boundaries that says, my boundary is I won't be hit or I won't be sworn at, for example. So it's not about letting them get away with it. It's about working with them to find the answer. And I think for many of our children, that's A, more helpful for them in terms of their development, but it's also not easy to acknowledge what's just happened. So you could argue that that is a consequence of their behavior. They're having to acknowledge it, even if they don't actually acknowledge it, but moving forward in that way. We also look at an aspect called baskets, which many of you will be aware of, which is really where we prioritize what you're going to focus on. We can't keep 8 million plates spinning all the time. It's not possible. Sometimes we have to put some of those plates down. And with the baskets approach, we help you as the parents decide which baskets or which plates you're going to put down for now and which plates you're going to keep spinning. And gradually over time, we notice that some of those other plates no longer need spinning. They naturally resolve themselves. And as the plates you are focusing on, keeping spinning, as you keep going on those, then gradually, actually, they don't need so much help and support. They resolve themselves anyway. So then you can then focus on something else. So the baskets is a really good way of reducing the levels of overwhelm we can often experience as parents when our children are struggling. There's just so much to do. So they're incredibly helpful. And I know lots of the parents we work with really do like using that part of the approach. And the final bit I wanted to probably talk about today is this idea of building a tribe of people around us who get it. People who understand how we're parenting, who understand that our child may have differing needs, who may not be able to do what a neurotypical child does, for example, who understand that we are making a choice to parent differently because maybe it's in our child's interests, or because actually that's how we want to parent. And I do believe this approach works for all children. You know, neurotypical, neurodivergent, any needs, this will help. And a lot of parents are moving towards this much more supportive, collaborative approach. It's not about not being their parent. You're still their parent, but you're working with them to help them with their development. And we are not using kind of negative consequences and shame to help them change behavior. And I think that's a hugely positive thing. We know that a number of parents that we work with don't have supporters. You might be sitting there thinking, but Sarah, I haven't got anybody around me who gets it. That's part of my problem. You know, there is no one around. And I get it. It's so hard. And you are not alone. There are people around there. You are welcome to come and join us on Facebook. We've got our free group, but we've also got the Connected Parenting Hub where we are there for you every step of the way. We've got training on all of these different aspects. We will help you implement them. You've got access to me and the team, not quite 24/7, but a lot of the time, where we will help you. We will answer your questions. We'll help you put this into place. So we are there because we all get it. We all know that we need people around us who get it and can help us and be our sounding boards and help us see a way forward. So this has just given you a brief overview. There are some other bits and pieces that we teach, and all of it, as I said at the start, is taking into account your child's needs. So if you have a child who is neurodivergent, how you use the approach will be different to a parent whose child has differing needs, because as one parent said to me, one size fits no one. So we don't give you a set script or schedule or approach and say, go and put it in like this. We say, here's the framework. How do we adapt this to meet your child's needs? And if there's bits that aren't going to work, we don't use them. It's not prescriptive like that. It's not you have to use every single bit. It's okay, let's work out how we can do this to make it work. If you've got a teen that goes, not talking to you, mate, go away. Okay, how do we start building connection in a way that works for your teen? And that might be in 30-second chunks to start with. So it's really personalized. It's really about finding what works for you. So, as I said, this is a brief overview. As you know, I like to keep these episodes short and sweet so you've got time to fit them into your day. But hopefully it's given you a feel for the approach for Connective Parenting MVR, and that it's not a prescriptive approach. It is incredibly flexible. We adapt it to meet your family's needs, your children's needs. And that could well be different if you have two children with differing needs. We will help you think about, how do I do it differently with each of my children without ending up completely exhausted and burnt out from trying to manage it all. We help you think about making sure that you are looking after yourself, because we all know that for many of us, that slips to the bottom of the list, 100%. So hope that's helped. Hope that's given you a feel for it. If you've got any questions, don't hesitate to get in contact. You can find us as Connective Family on Facebook, or the website connectivefamily.com. We are here for you. We are here to help. So don't hesitate to reach out if you've got any further questions. But hopefully, as I say, this has given you an overview. So there we go. That's it for this week's episode of Sarah Fisher Talks Connective Parenting. I will be back soon. Bye for now.